Don't miss your chance to win $1 million. Applications for the 2024 Black Ambition Prize Competition are now open. Are you building a high-growth business in tech, healthcare, AI, media entertainment, or consumer goods and services? If so, we'd like to help you scale. Apply for a chance to win capital, coaching, and access to an amazing community of diverse innovators at blackambitionprize.com.
I managed Pitbull at a time where I had a white Cuban rapper from down south that was comfortable speaking in Spanish on records. I saw something in him that not many people saw what I saw.
What is it that you saw?
Some of the most road trip worthy restaurants in Florida. And tonight we end up in Miami. There's a place serving everyone's favorite comfort food up.
This is Chef Teach, obviously the owner of the growing world famous House of Mac.
My father passed away in 2013. That was kind of like the light switch that went off in my head. I felt like my legacy was building other people's legacy and building other people's wealth, and I hadn't really focused on my own. The nerve of me to, you know, take this traditional dish and remix it, and it worked. We tried a bunch of different things. Some things stuck, some things didn't. You know, that's the thing with me. Like, I'm not afraid to do something and fail.
Any last words that you would want to share with entrepreneurs about being ambitious, weathering the storm? All right, Chef Teach, hey, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, former music executive working with some of the top like artists of our time, right? And so Pitbull, ASAP Rocky, Little John, and then now like food culinary genius. Tell us a little bit more about like starting in Brooklyn to where you are right now.
I was born in Brooklyn, but I've always been like back and forth between Miami and New York. My mom was like a nurse. But I moved back down here in 98, just needed some change. And I actually went to culinary school in 98. But when I worked on my first job in a restaurant, I hated it. And then somehow kind of diverted. I got into club promotions, evolved into record label promotions. And then my first record label job was with Uncle Luke. Mm-hmm. So through Uncle Luke, Pitbull was signed to Luke at the time. And that was like how that kind of happened there. And then ended up managing Pitbull for 14 years. Mm-hmm. And then my father passed away in 2013. So that was kind of like the light switch that went off in my head. At that point, I felt like my legacy was building other people's legacy and building other people's mm-hmm. wealth. And I hadn't really focused on my own. And when I saw the finality of my father passing, it just kind of made me kind of rethink things. And then I wanted to kind of focus more on my passion. So I always loved cooking therapeutically. I just didn't love doing it professionally. Mm-hmm. But doing it as a restaurant owner versus a chef working in a restaurant is kind of like a different angle. So I circled back around. Good friend of mine, Bun B from the legendary UGK, he really he really pushed me to take it more seriously. And I gave him my word. So I bought a food truck 2014. And then the food truck evolved into two food trucks and evolved into the brick and mortars.
Yeah. When you were managing artists, like what was some of the biggest lessons that you learned from that led to successfully running a food company?
I think the biggest thing that I walked away from the music business with was critical thinking. Mm-hmm. Like critical thinking, like especially like, you know, through the pandemic and like everything that's been happening over the last, you know, 3-4 years, critical thinking and the hustle of that, just the hustle of the music business that like every day is a different day. Mm-hmm. I kind of take that principle and apply it to what I'm doing with food. Cause it's, you know, every day is a different day in the restaurant business.
Yeah. What about on like the talent side, right? Because so much of running a business is identifying like the talent that exists within a person. Tell me a little bit more about like that, identifying talent as it relates to artists and now how it relates to the staff that you've built through your restaurants.
Well, I think that my parallel is always music, right? Mm-hmm. And culinary arts is art. And so I think I just kind of approach it the same way I approach the music business almost, like, you know, like in terms of talent and just delegating, because it's like, you know, It's when you find artists, you find talent. It's like, okay, cool, he's talented, but then you still got to surround him or her with a team. You got to find the right attorney, you got to find the right publicist, you got to find, because it's not one size fit all. Every ASAP Rocky is totally different from Pitbull. Pitbull's totally different from a Yo Gotti. Yo Gotti's totally different. You know what I mean? Like all of them have different things and different needs, And once you kind of understand that concept, it's just you just kind of take it and just apply it to different things.
Mm-hmm. You said you had like this aha, like light bulb moment of like, I've been building like legacy for other people, mm-hmm. and I may not have been building it for myself or my family the way I needed to. Can you talk a little bit more about like that light bulb moment, or even just like that thought process? Was it like a few things leading to that point, or just one?
There was things that, you know, I was already kind of on the fence. Like when I got into the music business, there was like a lot of love and a lot of passion. And when you know, like just like anything else, you start doing it for a while, you start realizing the politics and the, you know. And I was already kind of like on the fence. I stopped loving it. I didn't love it the way that I loved it when I first went into it. But, you know, just like I think a lot of us live through this lens that like, you know, we move as if like, you know, we have a do-over. Like you got one shot. That's it. When it's over, it's over. Right. And when I laid with when I saw my father land. So my sister called me. My dad lived in Detroit. And she called me. She was like, you know, dad's sick. You need to get here. I jumped on the first plane. By the time I landed, he had already passed. Wow. I didn't get a chance to say goodbye. I didn't get a chance to nothing. It was over. It was the final. Mm-hmm. My last conversation with my dad was, we're going to Disney World with the kids when the weather clears up. And so the finality of just seeing him just land in the bed, and it's just like, that's it. It's over. Whatever he did up to that point was that. It just made me like just rethink everything. Like, wow, like that's it. And so, you know, it just made me rethink life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like at that point I had a few dollars in the bank. You know, but at that point my legacy was helping build a bunch of people's legacy and their wealth, and I hadn't really focused on my own. So it just changed my perspective and just made me want to just kind of rethink things. Mm-hmm. So.
And your dad's legacy, right? Even his likeness is woven into House of Mack in so many different ways.
The guy with the afro. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know what? Like, I'm going to make my dad the Chef Boyardee of my brand or whatever. So I took my dad's image and made a caricature of him. And so, you know, it just represents something different to me.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit more about, because I remember when you launched the food truck and I was like, this man is making mac and cheese cool, right? You just made it pop in a way where it's the thing that we grew up on, right? It's the thing I feed my kids probably more than I should. But like, there was a way in which you took it from being this thing that I feel is very family territorial, right? Like, it's only a certain amount of person in the family that you trust with the mac and cheese.
Right.
Talk to us a little bit about that from a cultural standpoint, and then like the things that you did to just kind of make it like the sensation that you did in the way that you have.
Well, so first of all, because I was in the music business, I used to, when I say I used to like cooking therapeutically, when we would go on the road, we would be gone for like a month, 2 months, and then we would come home, and then I would throw these barbecues in my house, but the barbecues would, you know, my peers were like Flo Rida and Juwan Strader from Channel 6, and like, so like, But everybody would come, and then, you know, like the reason why I used to do the barbecues, because it wasn't like just going to a club or whatever. It's like everybody's coming, they're bringing their family, their kids, their wives, their, you know, whatever. And we would get together and we would celebrate. But it was also my test kitchen. Mm-hmm. So I would just put something on the table and just see how people reacted to it. I would just watch how people reacted to certain thing. And the thing with the mac and cheese, I'm my family's Trinidadian. Mm-hmm. So like my family makes macaroni pie. But when I went to culinary school, they taught me how to play around with the rules and all of that. And then the creativity of the music business like made me like, let me try to fuse some different things together. And it's like you said, mac and cheese is like a sacred dish. Mm-hmm. I mean, I want to say the mac and cheese at any holiday event is just as, if not more important than the turkey and the ham or anything that's mm-hmm. on the table. But the creative side of me was like, but what if I do this and you alter it? It was like the nerve of me to, you know, take this traditional dish mm-hmm. and remix it. But, you know, I remixed it.
Yeah.
And it worked. Yeah. And so the good thing about mac and cheese from a business standpoint is like, there's no genre to mac and cheese. It's white, black, pink, purple, green, young, old. Most people like some type of variation of mac and cheese. So we kind of rethought the way that we serve mac and cheese as an entree.
Yeah.
Mac and cheese is normally considered a side dish. And we kind of made people kind of rethink the way they consume mac and cheese, and it just worked.
Yeah. It sounds like a lot of betting on the culture over and over and over again, right? Because in like Black culture, the side dishes are the main dishes.
Right.
And then it's like, okay, what kind of meat comes after that?
Right.
But like mac and cheese, what kind of vegetables? Like those are the main event
right.
in Black culture. How did you settle on, because I don't even think y'all don't have just plain mac and cheese at your restaurant. Is there a reason?
No, because
everything has just like, but even your regular mac and cheese, I think, has like four cheeses in it.
Four, give or take.
Okay. Yeah. I'll give it Tracy. But like, how did you just settle? You said the barbecues were like the test kitchen for you. But like, how did you settle on like, I can build a whole empire around this one main dish?
I mean, so Culinary Arts made me understand spices and just how things pair and how things work. But then it's just like, I don't know. It's like I had a moment where I was just like, wait. So, because when I started playing with the rules, I'm like, wait. So if I, because a roux is like a cheese sauce, right? Bechamel or whatever. But like, it's like you can take a roux. It's a sauce. So you can add different things to it and it changes. And I just started playing around with it. You know what I mean? And it was just like, and then I would, like I said, I would just throw it out there and test it out. And it just worked. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if I told you that, like, you know, that was like the, you know, I had a master plan and I'd be lying to you. Like, it just kind of naturally evolved into what it turned into. And then it was just, you know, tried a bunch of different things. Some things stuck, some things didn't. But, you know, that's the thing with me. Like, I'm not afraid to do something and fail. Like, I'm not afraid to, you know, like, me and Rosie back there was just talking about, like, the comfort zone. And that's the thing. Like, a lot of people, they just get caught in this comfort zone and they just feel so safe there that they're scared to step outside of that. But outside of the comfort zone is where the magic happens.
Right.
You just got to be able to try things and not be afraid to try things. And it might work, it might not. But yeah. If you don't take that shot, you're 100% going to miss that shot.
Where does that fearlessness come from? Because this is...
I'm from Brooklyn, though. I don't know. I definitely got something to do with where I came from, how I was raised. But I've always been the underdog. I've always been told no more than I've been told yes. And, you know, I've just been through things in my life where it's just, you know, I gotta figure it out. But, you know, a lot of things there was times in my life where it was really like, you know, what do you have to lose other than trying? Like, the most they can say is no, right? And so that's just something that's just stuck with me. Like, you know, I managed Pitbull at a time where I had a white Cuban rapper from down south that was comfortable speaking in Spanish on records when none of that was popping. New York was, you know, like if you wasn't playing on High 97 in New York, if you ain't had something, you know, like none of that was working. Yeah. But I saw something in him that, you know, not like Luke saw it, like, but not many people saw what I saw. Like, I'd be moving around with him, like, you don't see what I'm seeing.
Yeah. What is it that you saw?
I don't even know if it was something that I saw. It was something more that I felt. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was on a roll with him with Luke when we used to be, because Pit can really rap. Like, he just figured out the formula of how to make songs. He just started going that route because he started making more money doing that. But, like, I used to be with Pit, and we'd jump off the bus in Maryland or jump off the bus in Virginia, and he'd jumping on the block freestyling with dudes. Like, Luke found him because he battled Dragon on a Rough Riders video shoot. So he could really rap. But it's that, like, seeing something in somebody and then, like for instance, there's so many people didn't believe in Pitt, but I saw what it was. And then it's like when I spin the block and I come back around and now all these dudes that didn't believe, and now you believe. Now you see what I'm seeing. Same thing with ASAP Rocky. I remember coming out here going to Stevie J at Live, and I'm like, yo, I got this kid, ASAP Rocky. Yeah. Nobody believed until he showed up on the VMAs with Rihanna. Then it's like, oh, yo, can you get dude for my birthday party? You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just, so I'm just used to psychologically, that's just something with people that, like, you know, people don't believe until you show them.
Yeah.
And so that's when I step out and I'm like, all right, cool. I'm gonna shoot my shot, whether you believe or not. You know, I'm used to people not believing. I'm gonna show you. And so that's kind of where it came from with this.
How do you keep going mentally when so many people don't believe, right? Because people always throw out, like, entrepreneurs, you got to get to 100 no's to a yes. But I'm like, once you get to the fifth or sixth no, it really starts to wane on you. Or when you just have this vision and it's so clear for you and you're just like, why can't other people see it the way that I see it?
Yeah.
Like, how do you keep going in the midst of disbelief from everyone else.
I think that's the magic in it. I think, you know, I think that's kind of like what sets people, like most successful people, when you hear their stories, like, you know, it's like they're successful because they kept going. Like, you know, everybody meets some type of resistance in some form or another. But the most of the success stories that you hear is like, man, I was sleeping. You know, you hear Tyler Perry. I was sleeping in my car. I was do that all. He could have gave up. He could have been like, you know, I can't take it no more. But right. He kept going, and he broke that barrier. So like, you know, I just try to study the greats before me. You know, like I said, most of the people, like even most of the guys that I work with music, like I talk about this. Pitt, you know, like Pitt was like the Spanish people thought he was too urban. And then the urban people thought he was too Spanish. So when we would go to BET, they like, yo, his pants is too tight. He, you know, he ain't blah, 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 blah. And when we go to Telemundo, they like, he's not speaking enough Spanish on records. Mm-hmm. So we had to literally create a lane. But we could have tapped out and been like, yo, this ain't working. But we kept going. And then, you know, you started seeing the magic happening. And then the magic happened. And it was like all those people circled back. Now, yeah, come host my show. Hey, come, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, I think because I've been a part of so many things that, like, I just realize, I just know that that's just a part of the process. Mm-hmm. And you just got to just push through that. And if you believe in it, you got to put the kind of energy in the universe that I'm not taking no for an answer. So it's like, you might hear me now, you might hear me later, but you're going to hear me. I'm not laying down. So
yeah. It
is what it is. You're going to see me. And so that's just my attitude towards life. And that's, you know, whether it's getting through the pandemic, whether it's getting through whatever, like, that's, you know, that's what keeps me going. Mm-hmm.
You ever felt some kind of way?
Real mean if I'm rambling too.
No. I love it. This is great. Have you ever felt some kind of way when people circle back? Because a lot of entrepreneurs grapple with that, right? Like, hey, I came to you two or three times in the beginning. You didn't see it. And now that it's hot, like you're back and you're in front of my face. Like, how did you manage that? Or was that never a problem for you?
No, it was in the beginning, like, especially with music. I used to take it personal in the beginning. And then when I realized it's a psychological thing with people. Like most people don't see things until they kind of bloom. And I stopped taking it personal. Mm-hmm. Not saying I don't remember, you know what I mean? But I just stopped taking it personal because, you know, just a lot of people don't have the vision or the third eye to be able to see something in the rough.
Yeah. You, I feel like, are a branding genius. Like, do you own that in what you've built, or?
I think that, like, I've just always tried to keep my finger on the veins of the pulse of the culture. And then, I wouldn't call it genius. I just feel like if you're in tune with what's going on around you, then you just have a better understanding of how to kind of maneuver what's happening because you're in tune. Because if you try to walk into a room and you don't know how to read the room or understand what's going on in the room, you're going to be lost. But if I got a relationship with someone, so I understand, I know, you know, and I know how to have a conversation and connect with y'all, then it's going to be a more effective conversation. You know, like if I go into a city and I know you have a relationship with Pharrell, mm-hmm. I'm going to have a more effective conversation with hitting you and telling you, hey, can you walk me in this room with Pharrell? Than me trying to just cold call him and try to just get him the phone. But that's understanding. I knew it. So.
Yeah.
I just try to just understand the room wherever I am. And the thing is about the music business also is like, you got to think about it. Like I got an artist that's popping in Miami, but now I got to take this package and I got to find a way to organically introduce it in Texas. Mm-hmm. And then, every city is different. Culture is different. It's not one size fit all. So like what works in Florida might not work in New York. What works in New York might not work in LA. And you got to understand the pulse of the culture where you are. So you can't approach every market the same. So again, I credit that to the music business for showing me how to kind of just, you know, change clothes and switch up in the different places that I went into. Yeah. So I want to say it's genius. I just try to just understand. That's it.
I'm going to say it's genius.
Well, thank you.
You got to own that. You got to own that.
I'll take it.
Can you talk a little bit more about like relationship cultivation, right? Because the music business, the entertainment business is all relationships, right? And then the same thing when you're running a consumer goods business in the food space, it's relationships as well. But I think one of the things that you have shown so masterfully is like how to not only cultivate those relationships, respect those relationships, but at the right time also leverage the relationships as well.
Right.
Are there any things that you learn specific, like this is like Teach's way of cultivating a relationship that could be helpful for entrepreneurs?
I learned early on. I mean, I actually learned this from Luke. Because he used to say, when you go into the building, respect the janitor the same way you respect the CEO, right? And I've literally seen situations where, like, I've gone in a station. Like, we go in a station in January, and, like, these little guys in, like, Big Siph and Deluxe in L.A., like, they were, like, the little intern dudes at the station. And, you know, they were running around, but we always showed them love. We went and picked them up, take them to the club, blah, blah, blah. We circled back 6 months. They got the number one show in L.A., on Power 106, the biggest station in LA. They was the interns. They was the little dudes just running around passing out flyers and all that. You circle back. You know what I mean? We could have treated them like flunkies. You know what I mean? Yeah. But that's the examples of, like, you don't even know who you, but just as a human being, I just try to just treat people. It don't cost me nothing. It don't take nothing for me to just try to treat somebody with respect. Like, I got people that circle back on me right now that, like, you know, when they was interns and they was trying to find their way and they called me and I answered the call and they asked me for advice, it don't cost me nothing to give you some advice or try to steer you in the right direction to give you a plug or whatever. But now they I don't even remember the conversations we had, but they remember the conversations I had with them. So I just learned earlier on that just, you know, it don't hurt to just treat people with respect, you know what I'm saying? Not based on who you think they are, what they can do for you or whatever the case may be. Just try to just treat people with just common respect. It just goes a long way.
Nice, nice. Let's talk a little bit more about moving from the food truck to opening up brick and mortar. But specifically, like, I remember having a conversation with you in Wynwood with your food truck when, like, Uber Eats was just starting to pop off.
Right. I was literally, I was like one of the first five restaurants in Miami, even though I was on a food truck on Uber Eats.
And you talked about how much of a game changer that was. Like, you were like, I got to carve out, like, a new window just for Uber Eats orders.
Right.
Talk about that a little bit.
So first of all, my relationship with Uber, when I was managing Pitt, Uber, the COO of Uber at the time, when they were trying to penetrate the Florida market, they were having, you know, because obviously the cab company and all that is like very lucrative out here. So they were having a lot of trouble cutting through the red tape trying to get that. So they hollered at me to try to get Pitt to help them get Uber launched in Florida.
Yeah.
And he passed on it. For whatever reason, I know he regrets it, but that's a true story. Ask him. He passed on Uber for equity.
Yeah, I heard him tell the story.
But that was my relationship with Uber. So like when they were launching out here with Uber Eats, I already knew what Uber was and I knew what they were doing in San Francisco, New York, and everywhere else. So I knew what kind of opportunity that it was for me to launch with Uber Eats out here. So you know, I just try to just tap into the innovation of, you know, what was coming to the market and just try to be first to market with certain things so I could tap into it. But like now, like Uber is like, those fees that they charge is like so crazy because, you know, like, because Uber was a gift at one point because it was just like secondary income. But then when COVID hit, it started turning into like a primary income. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, okay, cool. My food cost is 30%. My labor cost is 20-25%. Uber's taking 30%, or I'm left with, right?
Yeah.
So then that started, you know, it's like Uber started off as like a great thing for me, but like now everybody's trying to find a way around it. You got owner.com and you got like different things that like they're building these platforms that are subscription based.
Yeah.
So you can have the same. Uber is always good for marketing. Like nobody's going to have the reach that Uber has,
right.
But you know, it's like as a business owner, like, you know, that 30% is, I don't know if I went off topic.
No, 30% is a lot. And it's a business decision that sometimes it requires you to pivot, right? Like what worked in the very beginning or what worked for a season in the business, at some point it no longer serves you as you continue to grow. You transitioned from food trucks, not even transition, because you still had the food trucks at the time, into brick and mortar.
Right.
Why did you make that decision?
Well, it was always, you know, when I started with my 2-year plan was always to have a brick and mortar. But the reason why I started with a truck first was I almost wanted to approach the market because what I know is grassroots. And so I'm used to doing street team and going out and touching people and trying to figure out what worked. So the food truck was kind of like that for me. The food truck was me going out into the market, kind of testing out different areas, seeing what worked, what didn't work for me. Mm-hmm. So when I finally planted my roots in Wynwood, I knew that we were already doing numbers there. Yeah. And so the first place we went in, when we were started like little breweries and stuff like that, and then we ended up permanently leaving the truck in the Wynwood Yard. And then the Wynwood Yard actually was, if you go there now, there's condos there. Yeah. Lennar put up condos, but when we found out that they were planning on selling that property, we were there for like 2 years. And when we found out they were going to sell a property, that's when I started like actively looking for a brick and mortar. But it's crazy because my business plan was like, in 2 years, I want to be in a brick and mortar. Mm-hmm. And it was like, almost, like, you know, like, you ever seen a meme where it's like what people think success look like? Yeah. It's like the straight line. And in real life, it's like but like in real time, it was like, because I started the truck in October of 2014. And then it was like November of 2000. We launched in May of 2015, and then October 2017, I got my first brick and mortar. So it was like a little bit over 2 years. We were in a restaurant. So,
mm-hmm. So multiple restaurants. What is it like managing and kind of scaling the company now?
So it's a lot, and it's, you know, pre-COVID, it was a lot easier, and just speaking on a pivot, it was like since COVID's happened, it's been a pivot. It's been, you know, everything from, you know, actual pandemic and all the setbacks with that, then came out of pandemic, then you're dealing with inflation. I know y'all dealing with inflation personally. You know what you used to get for $100 in supermarket versus what you get right now. Well, I'm selling the food, so this is, you know what I mean? But the thing is with me selling food, like I'm gonna give you an idea. A case of chicken wings right now averages about like $60-$65. During when inflation hit, chicken wings were like $210 a case, right? But like for me as a business owner, I can only go but so high before you're like, I'm not even buying no chicken wings in a store because it's too expensive. So then you either got to eat that cost and just kind of just get through it. So hopefully you're selling the wings and they'll come in and buy some Mac or whatever. But, you know, like, that's why Wingstop went to Thigh Stop, mm-hmm. at one point. They started selling sandwiches. Yeah. They like wings, you know what I mean?
And chicken thighs. Yeah. It's just like lemon because, pepper chicken.
Okay. Right. But that's the reason why they did that, right? But a lot of people on, you know, like, I'm a business owner, so I understand that, but a lot of consumers don't understand mm-hmm. that. So it's like, you know, people, oh, you trying to rob us? I'm trying to pay my bills. Yeah. Like, you know, so it's been, and in the real estate crisis, because we stayed open, mm-hmm. and everybody else was closed. So everybody from New York and San Francisco, LA moved here. And then what that did for us is it made all the real estate prices go up. Right. So if you was renting something, you was paying $5,000. When your lease is up, now they're going to market price. Now that $5,000 went to $15,000. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just been a lot of just pivoting and just trying to just get to the other side. And again, like I think the critical thinking in the music business is what helps me guide me through a lot of this more than just, you know, just being an operator of a restaurant. It's just like you literally got to hustle and just try to find a way mm-hmm. to get to the other side. And it's challenging because you got employees and you got, you know, people, and some people understand and some people don't understand. They just, I can't work to get my check and I just want whatever. But like, it's things happening in real time and you got to adjust and like, you know, you gotta, like, you know, when COVID happened, it was like I was carrying a tribe on my back. I had over 75 employees, and I'm turning on CNN every day, and I'm seeing people get laid off, and I'm seeing them stand on the unemployment line. My accountant is like, listen, we don't know what's happening. You need to lay off at least like 40 people. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, yeah, but I don't want to do that. Like, you know what I mean? These people been rocking with me. So I'm like, I crack my safe, and I'm like, I'm going to carry it. But like, okay, cool. It's a year. All right, cool. It's never happened before, by the way. Like, nobody knows how long this is happening. Nobody knows what's going on. A year passes by. Okay, cool. Hold my beer. Hold this next year. Uh-huh. And then so it's like literally you feel like you like paddling in the middle of the ocean with no sharks circling around. You was a hurricane coming. No buoys, no help, no nothing. And it's just like, you know, I could swim and I could paddle, but like how long am I supposed to
do this
for? And so, you know, that was the thought process of like the last few years. But mm-hmm. we're here.
When you got to the moment where you felt like you could breathe again in your business, like what was that moment for you?
I mean, well, I got a little, you know, like when they started doing like all like the PPP and all, I mean, you know, it was like putting a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound, because it was like, I lost $2 million, but you give me $200,000. That's great. Thank you. You know, but it's just like, you know, I'm still trying to totally get back to the point where I can breathe and move the way it hasn't gotten back to the point where it was pre-COVID. So it's like still pivoting. Like my location on Second Avenue, we had to shut that down because we were paying $40 a square foot. Mm-hmm. And then it went from $40 a square foot. And then when my lease was up, they went to market value. So now I went to $70 a square foot. So they almost doubled my rent. It was like, all right, well, I'm out. But then everybody moved here from New York. So every second generation kitchen, people grabbing them because they don't want to go through the permits of pulling. I mean, they don't want to go through the headaches of pulling permits. And right. They want something that's already a restaurant. So now it took me 7 months to find another restaurant. So in the meanwhile, I got to go to a Cloud Kitchen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at least like I keep the name relevant and, you know, whatever. I got Orlando going and I got blah, blah, blah. But, it, you know, it's just like you got to constantly just keep it going. And there's no playbook. There's nobody like sitting here telling me like, hey, this is how you do this. Because, again, it's not one size fit all. Every single business owner, their needs and their audience and everything is different. So you just got to just figure it out. And it's a very lonely, and, you know, like I had to start doing therapy. I had, you know, I think I borderline might have went through depression at one point. Yeah. Because, and I didn't even know it was depression. It was just, I was just staying home. I didn't want to, you know, and like I had to have people get me back outside because my things wasn't right. And if I, you know, for me, if I'm not right, I'm not trying to be like, if I can't be out partying and doing all of that when I'm not good at home. I feel like, you know, it's like somebody you playing PlayStation when you got to pay your rent. Like you need to get out there and find a way to pay your rent. You know what I'm saying? So it's been character building, you know what I mean? But, you know, I think, you know, it all starts up here, and, you know, you just got to have a mentality that, like, you know, no matter what, you're just going to just push through it. And I think that I got a good circle of people and support around me, and I got a good therapist.
Yeah.
That just help, you know, just keep my head right. I didn't even understand the importance of therapy until like all this stuff happened. Like, you know what I mean? Like, cause you know, I come from a place where like, you know, yeah, I'm gonna figure it out, everything gonna be all right. But you know, I had to learn that like, you know, sometimes it's okay not to be okay.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like sometimes it's just not okay, and it's just all right. Sometimes you need to unpack all of that because you internalize, well, me as a man, like I internalize a lot of things, but then you just don't know when it's going to peak out if you don't address it. So, you know, I learned a lot like through the last few years.
Yeah. One, thank you for sharing that and being transparent, because I think Black community, but then also entrepreneurship, therapy is being normalized a little bit more and people are being transparent. But I think in those pivots, in those dark days, in those transitions, being able to seek that external support, right? And then like the tools to like figure these things out. Like I went to therapy in the transition of selling Black Tech Week, and then even just around getting ready to like leave Center for Black Innovation. Like that was really hard for me because right, it's the baby that I built. It was the identity.
Right.
But then I felt like I didn't have the right vocabulary to have tough conversations with people where right, they say like, no, you got to stay.
Right.
I'm like, no, I know it's time to leave. Otherwise, you end up hurting the thing that you spent so much exactly time building, or like what you said about you end up retreating when you really need to be out there, right, but you don't have like the safe space, right, right? Or the sacred space. And so thank you for sharing that. Any last words that you would want to share with entrepreneurs about just either being ambitious, weathering the storm, or really just kind of transitions like you've shared before?
I think there's a lot of like misconceptions about entrepreneurship, but like I think as an entrepreneur, if you want to follow entrepreneurship, I think it's very important that you try to find, like, follow passion. Don't try to chase a bag, because the bag is not enough. Like, because you know, like people have this conception that like you know, money solves all problems. Don't get me wrong. Financial freedom is great, but money, you don't just wake up with money one day and money just makes you happy and it solves everything. So you know, you can do something and you can make money and be unhappy making money. And that's what happened to me when I was doing the music business. I was making money, but I just wasn't happy doing it. And it sounds crazy, but you know, I run across college kids, and I talk to people all the time that like they're chasing professions and chasing things that like their parents wanted them to do, or like, you know, like, you know, they're trying to live up to some type of legacy, but they don't love what they're doing. So they spend a bunch of time trying to do something that they don't love doing. And then, you know, they end up wasting a lot of time and going into something else in their life. I think it's important to chase passion and don't let nobody knock you if you're square. And like you just keep going.
Yeah.
You just got to just keep going. Nobody says it's going to be easy, but if you really believe in what you're trying to do and you're trying to get it done, you just got to just keep going.
I got to ask you a follow-up question to that, right? And so, like, what was the point for you where it went from money to passion? Because I think a lot of times people say that, like, don't chase money, follow your passion. But when you don't have it, that is the thing that you need. But there's a point when you do get it, when you realize that's not it. Like, was there a specific moment for you?
Well, the thing is, like, I mean, it's going back to, like, when my dad passed. Like, I made my first million doing music. I made money before I got into the food business. So by the time I came into food business, it wasn't even about money. It was more about legacy and passion and, you know, whatever. So a lot of people didn't really understand. When I first got into the food business, I was literally on conference calls, on Sony conference calls, with the phone in my ear, and then in the kitchen cooking, and they like, somebody got making a bunch of noise in the background, put your phone on mute. And I'm like flipping chicken on a grill and doing all this kind of stuff. And I was kind of like torn between the music, because I was making money, and I'm traveling, I'm flying on private jets, and I'm different cities every day, but like I just didn't love it. And so like I tried to do both, and I'm like, okay, well, I'll just do this on the weekends and whatever. And then I ultimately had to make a decision, because I'm like, I'm not giving these artists 100%.
Yeah.
My heart ain't into it like that no more. I don't have the eye of the tiger no more. You know what I'm saying? Like when I first started in this and I loved it, I'd be out 18 hours a day, wake up next day, do it again and all that. I'm not excited about it like that no more. So I felt like I wasn't putting my heart into it like that no more. And I felt like I wasn't doing a justice to the artist that I was. So I was like, I got to make a decision. Am I going to keep doing this, or am I going to bet on myself? And I said, I'm going to just bet on myself.
Nice. I love it. Bet on yourself every single time. Chef Teach, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having
today.
Me. I appreciate it.
Let us know and the audience know where they can follow you online and continue along in the journey with you.
So you can follow me at World Famous House of Mac on Instagram, and my site and everything else is www.houseofmac.com. Awesome. And I appreciate y'all having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Heineken is proud to support Black Ambition in helping to unlock opportunities for its participating founders.